Welcome to Pencils Down, a Finalis podcast. This is a show for listeners wanting to learn more about the ins and outs of the private securities brokerage landscape. Each episode will feature insightful conversations with the world's leading investment bankers, placement agents, capital providers, startup CEOs, and more. And with that, let's get into the show.
All right, and we are here with Ed Gares with True North. Ed, it is a pleasure to have you on here on the Pencils Down podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Well, listen, I really like to kick things off with just getting a little bit into your background. I'm just fascinated to hear the story of anybody who's an attorney who decides to move into the investment banking and business brokerage world. Please tell us your story and kind of the arc of your career that led you to launch True North.
Sure. So my background, and I guess, how I got into this has been a very circuitous, whatever that word is. It went around the long way. You know, I started out, I went to law school and went to undergrad and got a silly political science degree like most of us did back in the day. And then went to law school at Pepperdine. And when I finished that, I had a ROTC scholarship. So I went into the military. So I was a captain in the Army. When I got out of the Army, it was one of the worst environments to become to go back into being a lawyer. So I ended up selling food ingredients and basically doing sales and marketing for a very large food manufacturing company. Went from there to consulting with Coopers & Lybrand and eventually PricewaterhouseCoopers. From there, I went into the software industry, and that's really where I started to get my M&A legs. Was involved, initially in just the back end, doing the integration of new assets and new personnel and those types of things and figuring out, hey, what do we do with these people? What do we do with this this new technology? How do we make sure we can actually still make it work for customers, those types of things? But multiple acquisitions that I was involved in there, somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 billion worth of acquisitions and mergers. It went from that early stage where you're just figuring out what to do with the stuff after you've bought it to, hey, let's do some strategy. Let's actually figure out, what should we buy? Or who should we be bought by? And, really kind of doing that. Later on in my career, I moved around to a few different companies, some tech startups, did my own consulting work. At one point, I was working for a transportation company, and I thought to myself, well, gosh, what's next? And I thought, I've been kind of interested in this mergers and acquisitions stuff. Maybe I should try that from the standpoint of an attorney. So I decided to go back and get my Nevada bar exam passed. And, I had taken the California bar exam back in 1993, and this was 26 years later that I went to go take the Nevada bar exam. And what a big change between taking one exam and the other.
I wanted to just ask you, because I'm always curious about, folks that decide to go into law and what the reasoning was. By the way, are you from Southern California originally? Because I saw you went to USC as well for undergrad.
Yeah, no, I was born in Northern California, but raised in Southern California out in the desert near a naval weapons test station.
Oh, awesome.
A place called China Lake, and actually worked as a defense contractor for a couple of my summers out there.
Oh, look at that. And so, you were a political science undergrad, I think, at USC.
Right.
Decided to go to law school. What drove that desire to be trained in law?
So it's another one of my funny stories. My father used to, basically challenge me and both my older sisters about, hey, what are you going to do? And I saw the torment that especially my middle sister went through with answering that question, and I decided I was going to be prepared. So when he came to me, I figured, hey, I'm going to choose one of those professions that there is absolutely no way for him to say anything bad about. So I said, I'm going to be a corporate attorney. And he goes, oh.
That okay. Passed the test.
That passed the test. And he didn't give me any further problems. But what I, hadn't really counted on was the fact that once my father put a pin in something like that, it stayed there. So there was no changing for, you know, any direction. After that, it was absolutely, you're going to be a corporate attorney. That's the direction that you're going. And so it was always a matter of being in business. You know, he asked me, I think one of the questions he asked me was, why do you want to be a corporate attorney? And I said, because I want to be able to tell the guys in charge what they can and can't do.
Fair enough. And there's a lot of merits to that. It's just interesting to see all of, you know, the various motivations that lead to that decision. Because for me, it was, I was in finance, and then I rode the boom and bust cycle of the credit crisis from the perspective of being in financial services. And I thought, you know, I'm a deal junkie, but I want to get to the deal from a different perspective that's a little bit more risk hedged. And that was the path to get there. But it's just, to me, it's fascinating because there's really an opportunity to build around that core skill set any kind of career that you want. And I think what happens, though, oftentimes is folks find themselves in that kind of the rat race associated with being in a large law firm, and it's easy to stay. It's very enticing to stay, I should say.
Well, and it's steady, and you really do get linked into it. And I think one of the things that I bring to my law clients is, you know, a different background. And, you know, I've talked with other folks who are recovering attorneys, and, you know, they talk about their experience in law school and how law school doesn't actually teach you business. And it's very true. My practice of law is very much more of a, you know, business focused. You know, how can I make the law work for this business purpose? How can I find the right things to help my client get done what they want to do? And, you know, although that is, you know, somewhat creative, like you said, I'm a little bit of a deal junkie with all of the different deals that I've been involved in, with all of the different industries that I've been involved in, working through and figuring out the problems and figuring out, hey, how can we make this work? How can we make this happen is really what kind of drives me. And it's really what makes me interested in the deal side of things.
So I'm so interested because you started Navi, which I think it's a hybrid. It's a business advisory as well as a law practice. And so I guess my first question is kind of, how did you conceive of or envision the opportunity around being more of a hybrid practice? And then I'm very curious to hear how you parlayed that into becoming a senior advisor for True North.
My law and business advisory practice, Navi, which my wife came up with the name. She's like, listen, you're kind of like the navigator. You tell people how they can make things happen. So why don't you call your company that? And I was like, okay. And, you know, happy wife, happy life. And I was like, go for it. And I like it. You know, it's a good name. But the real piece there was, is, you know, exactly that. It was all about, hey, what is it that I really am interested in doing? And what I was really interested in doing from some of the consulting work and from the other work that I had done previously for other employers, it's always been about, you know, figuring things out. It's always been about coming up with the plan. How do we make this work? How do we make people successful? And I think one of my passionate areas is really with small and medium and mid-market businesses. A lot of these companies, you know, they have a lot of potential. They have a lot of great things going for them, but they don't always get, you know, that piece of advice or that, you know, that extra help that they need to point them in the right direction. And, you know, I think that happens within mergers and acquisitions as well, where you've got companies that are, they're looking to try to make something happen, but they don't think they can really go out and acquire businesses. And it's like, sure you can. You just need a plan. You just need some ideas about how to make those things happen. You know, other companies who are like, well, I'm not sure that it's the right time for me to sell my business, or I'm not sure it's the right time for me to look to, you know, merge with somebody else. But, you know, I really, either they want to get out of it, or they want to try something new, or, you know, they just feel like they've reached a plateau. And they want some fresh blood. They want something, some new infusion of capital or new infusion of additional expertise to help them grow their business. And that's the point where it's like, listen, we can make something happen for you. We can figure these things out. We just need to sit down and figure out exactly, talk about exactly what you're looking for and come up with a plan for how we make it happen.
And what's interesting about that, Ed, is that in my experience, having that legal training, that legal skill set, it basically allows you to paint a picture, not just, you know, on the basis of an understanding of what might be a good business strategy, a path to execute that business strategy. And I think that's oftentimes missing if you're just talking to a business advisor or you're just talking to an attorney, right? Is they're so interconnected. And I think when I was starting out in law, I had this idea that law was, the corporate law might be the glue, but I don't think I fully appreciated how connected legal advice was to business advice until I actually left the law firm and became an entrepreneur myself, because I feel like that integration process is core to how you grow and scale a business.
I agree. You know, one of the things that was also very foundational for me was the fact that I helped pay my bills and helped put myself through college by working in law firms while I was all the way in undergrad. So my second year at USC, I actually started working for a law firm in Century City, doing everything from family law to, you know, injury law to complex litigation. And, you know, there was a lot of that. It was a lot of that that really kind of shaped, you know, my understanding of the law and, you know, how it interacted with business, because a lot of these were, you know, they were property partnerships or they were businesses that were in litigation with, you know, other businesses and that type of thing. So a lot of good stuff. And, you know, I think that the variety of my background and experience, all of the different things that I've done in my career, is kind of what makes me valuable as an advisor. A lot of times I'll get, you know, I'll be sitting in a meeting and it'll be like, well, you know what? I did that one time at this one company and blah, blah, blah. And after about three or four of those, somebody will go, Ed, what haven't you done? And my stock answer for that is always, well, I've never been an all-star in the NBA.
Well, there you go. You can't do it all, Ed.
You can't do them all, exactly.
So curious to know about kind of the transition or kind of the journey into True North M&A. Share a little bit about that story.
Sure. So, you know, I had been looking around for additional research or additional partners and additional resources to help me out with building up the M&A side of my law practice. And I was introduced to some folks, you know, at Sunbelt, and True North M&A is kind of the big brother, the mid-market mergers and acquisitions side of the firm. And when I heard what they were working on and the types of clients that they were working with and the resources that they had, the focus that they have on, you know, the founders and on the key executives and on really making sure that legacies are preserved and those types of things, really helping people, which is really kind of why I was getting into it as well, is that I really wanted to provide that expertise and insight and help people be successful in those transitions. It just seemed like a perfectly great fit. And there's a lot of things that I think are great about how True North goes to market, how they present themselves, and how they help their clients. So it's been a good experience thus far.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. We're in the midst today of the biggest wealth transfer that the world has ever seen. I think it's, you know, close to $70 trillion as the baby boomers kind of hand off their wealth to the next generation. And it is a tremendous opportunity to take that skill set now and leverage a larger platform like True North to extend that advice. So really excited to hear about the fact that you're also now involved there. And tell me a little bit about what excites you specifically about True North as a platform, because obviously there's others across the country. What is it specifically about True North that gets you excited?
I really do think that it is kind of the boutique nature of things. So in other words, that you're able to give your clients that personalized service. You're really able to work with them to work through what their goals are, what they're trying to, you know, get out of it. What's their next step in life, and how can we make sure that the exit or the sale of their business or their merger with another company helps them get there? You know, a lot of times I think that, you know, mergers and acquisitions deals are too financially oriented. In other words, they look too much at just the numbers that are on the spreadsheets. And a lot of times I think that there's so much more in some of these companies. And that's one of the things, you know, that my technology background, I think, really brings in as well, is that I think that the real value in a technology company is not necessarily the numbers on the paper, but it's the vision behind the technology that's been designed. It's the vision. It's the potential or the promise of that technology, and also the application of that technology, or the way in which that technology will help a potential buyer take their business to the next level.
And so just on that point of technology, I did notice that you have a deep background in tech, having built and designed mobile apps on iOS, Android, not a skill set that you often find among attorneys, I will say. And that beyond that, you've also been an advisor to a number of technology companies and other professional services startups, helping them build from the ground up. And so I have to ask, you know, I'm just curious to know about your insights and perspectives on fintech lately, especially with all of the developments that we've seen in the crypto and AI spaces. Have you specifically worked on deals that have these attributes?
So I have not had a chance to work on deals that have the attributes for fintech and crypto just yet. I don't expect that they're that far off, though. I do think that there's going to be some industry consolidation, especially within crypto, just to shore things up. I do think that, I looked at crypto several years back when somebody first mentioned the word Bitcoin to me. Technology has always been one of those little things in the background. My father was an electronics genius and invented a lot of different things for the military, for different programs and stuff. And so there's always been that, you know, background to me as well. And, you know, when I first started looking at crypto, I think that there's a lot in the technology that has so much promise and so much potential. I love the distributed computing nature of things. I love the technology and the trackability that the blockchain provides. There's great stuff to leverage. On the other hand, I also think that, you know, the whole aspect of crypto specifically, where we're leveraging resources to create a coin or a different set of money, was not something that was compelling to me. So I've never been an investor in crypto, but I do think that, you know, crypto companies have lots of great technology and lots of great things that they've built up on top of that foundation, all of which are leverageable. And I think the more that they get together, the stronger those platforms are going to be.
It's fascinating to me just how quickly these tech adoptions are happening. If you think about, you know, it took maybe 4 or 5 years for crypto to go from being a fringe conversation item on a Reddit thread to going mainstream.
Yes.
Similarly, or even more dramatically, I would say, the way that ChatGPT has taken the world by storm as an AI application is really remarkable. You have kind of these tech adoption trends that have gone from taking decades, in the case of the introduction of the new automobile or the radio or the television, to now taking days or weeks. And obviously, there's going to be a lot of opportunities for new businesses and a lot of value being created, but a lot of businesses just aren't going to make it. In your perspective, what are the attributes of a business that can ride one of those waves and successfully make it to the other side?
Looking out beyond your skis, I guess, is, you know, the biggest thing that I think there is out there. One of the things, you know, and we have this conversation about, you know, the news and everything, and, you know, AI and how ChatGPT and or artificial intelligence is going to take all of these jobs. And I keep coming back to the same thing, which is, until AI is truly able to be creative and not solely derivative based upon its inputs, it will not overtake what is in our human brains, which is, you know, creativity. I think that the companies that are going to be the most successful with the AI revolution are the ones who see it as the tool that it is. So in other words, how can I take that and truly turn it in, you know, leverage it and make my business more effective, more efficient, you know, get time to value even faster, make things faster. That's the stuff that I think is there. And, you know, I think, you know, from a worker's perspective, I've always been the guy who's automated the stuff, you know, and taken the stuff that's routine and boring and figured out how to build a system around it so that I wouldn't have to do the boring stuff so much. I want to get rid of the boring stuff. I want to do the stuff where we're solving problems and looking at interesting things. That is what I think the companies that are really looking out and saying, this is a great tool. What can we do with this? What can we do with this that is going to improve the human condition? What can we do with this that is going to take us light years above, you know, beyond our competition and actually turn our company into the next big thing? That's the key. Look ahead. Don't look at, you know, today's problems. Today's problems are going to take care of themselves most of the time. There's stuff that's in them. Yeah, you'll need to pay attention to them to a certain extent, but some of that is looking out ahead of you. What is it when you're like skiing or something like that, skiing or like, you know, snowboarding? If you look down at the snow, you're going to catch an edge and you're going to eat it. You got to always be looking off at that horizon.
So true. You know, I just came across an AI tool. Yeah, there's a proliferation now of AI tools that are leveraging the API that OpenAI makes available into their ChatGPT. And there's one tool that is specifically focused on reviewing legal contracts. And I saw a demo and I was frankly blown away. And because it was the type of legal work that I was doing as a first, second year associate. And I had this moment where I recognized, you know, those jobs are going away. Now there's going to be new jobs. Maybe instead of having to hire a law firm on any given year, 10 new first year associates, maybe now they just need to hire two or three, because those two or three are going to be leveraging AI to build first drafts of contracts. But it really struck me, this notion that paradigm shift that we're seeing isn't just going to affect technology companies or companies that choose to ride that wave. It's going to affect professional services firms as well. And I'm just curious about kind of opportunities that you see there, because I know some of your background is also in advising professional services firms. Do you see that line between professional services and technology companies is getting more blurred over time? And as a consequence of that, what opportunities do you see for professional services companies in this new era?
Yeah, I do think that it's getting blurred. And I think that it's, you know, some of the big blur that I think originally happened was when we went from, you know, on-premise installations of software, you know, big implementations and then walking away to, you know, the SaaS model. Where
Amazon Web Services, right?
Exactly. Web services. And it's like, you know, there was a shift. At one point, I was consulting with folks about customer success and, you know, how do you make your customers successful? Because there's so much of technology that unless you can get the users to actually participate, to actually interact with your software and do what they need to do, your product won't be successful. The company that buys your product won't be successful. They won't see the return on investment. I see that, you know, the way that some of these tools can be used and that they can be leveraged for some of these, you know, IT services or for, you know, managed services providers, those types of things, they should be looking at this. And, you know, you mentioned law and contracts. That goes back to one of the things we talked about earlier, where it was, you know, why am I doing more of the deal side? And it's because I like the creative side of things as opposed to the mechanical, hey, let me go look at my template file, figure out all of the different, you know, clauses that I need to cobble together to handle this contract for this person. I don't necessarily want to be doing that. I want to be able to be thinking about, hey, how do I create the contract that will give my client exactly what they need, but it can be seen as a win-win by both sides? From a professional services and from a customer success standpoint, it's the same thing that they should be looking at. How can we leverage these tools to be even smarter about how we take our technology and make it work in a real world environment? How can we leverage these tools to figure out what will it take to make Joe, who's really stubborn and doesn't like to use technology and doesn't like to log in if he doesn't have to, he much prefers to be on the phone talking to people. What is it going to take to get him to participate? How do we get him to see that there's value in interacting with the software. And I think to a certain extent, you know, one of the AI things that I've done, there's an investor group that I'm part of that, you know, they've talked about how you can use ChatGPT to build up your marketing personas. And, you know, then from the marketing personas, how do you craft a message? From that message, how do you turn it into specific emails and web content and all that kind of. And I look at that and I'm like, that's exactly the same type of thing that professional services firms have to be thinking about doing for their clients. And, you know, taking those people and, you know, I think it's an exciting time for human workers because you should be looking at this like, oh my gosh, the shackles of the boring stuff is going to go away because the computer is actually going to do it for me. It's not a tool for me to cobble things together anymore. It's actually going to cobble it together for me based upon the prompts and the commands that I give it. So I think that's exciting.
Totally with you. And that's where the knowledge, the insight, the experience comes in to know how to prompt the artificial intelligence, to know what to look for, right? Because I was reading somewhere that there's a new profession that exists today that didn't exist just a few months ago, which is professional prompt writers for ChatGPT. But that professional prompt writing is really around, you know, what are the key issues that your client is trying to solve for? And issue spotting from that perspective, which is not something that, and perhaps ChatGPT will get that savvy at a certain point, but that's something that is, I think, much harder to code, is this notion of kind of the dynamic links that you're able to derive in your own mind on the basis of the inputs that you're hearing from a given client, which may not be just what they're saying. It could also be how they're saying it, and it could be the context in which they're saying it, which could then influence the correct course of action. And I think it's going to take a while longer before artificial intelligence is able to perceive all of those variables.
I agree 100%. And, you know, you were mentioning that there's multiple tools that have gotten, you know, access into the OpenAI environment through the API and, you know, that they're building these things out. And one of the ones that I've played with the most is the one that has created almost a wizard-like interface around the prompt language. So rather than having to figure out how to write the prompts, they're like, oh, you want to do a blog post? Okay. How many paragraphs would you like? You know, how many words, you know? And they basically walk you through the steps and then they prompt you for each one of the paragraphs where it's like, okay, I got to come up with some keywords. These are the things that I wanted to talk about. Okay, generate. And then you're like reading through and figuring out, hey, has it given me what I want? Okay, no, regenerate. Okay, let's change the tone a little bit. Okay, hey, that's it. And now it's done, but it only took you 5 minutes as opposed to taking, you know, 30 minutes and several cups of coffee or tea or whatever and trying to, you know, make a go of it.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating stuff. Well, to get back to True North briefly, if I may, I would just be curious, Ed, to know, if you're willing to share just some representative transactions that you've worked on since you joined the firm about a year ago.
Since joining the firm about a year ago, you know, most of the stuff that I am working on is still in progress. So there's still some confidentiality. So I won't name drop anything. You know, I like to, there are some companies that we're working with that are, you know, in the area of cybersecurity. That I think are, you know, I think that that's another one of those areas that just isn't going to go away. There's so much potential behind these companies. You know, I've worked with another company that is doing things that are, that have to do with large warehouse environments. And I'll leave it at that because otherwise I'll give away who it is. But the technology is such that nobody else is doing what they've done. And, you know, I think that one of the things that, you know, I think that especially in like the mid-market and especially in technology, you almost have to help them figure out how to paint the picture for some of these potential buyers. And those are the kinds of things that, you know, that I've done so far with M&A at True North, you know, with one client, just by painting those pictures for those specific buyers, we increased their, and it's not a closed deal yet, but we increased them by 50% right out of the gate in terms of their selling price. And that's simply by saying, listen, guys, let's think about how much this means to this buyer, and this buyer, and let's be very specific with them about how they're going to be able to implement your technology once they buy you. How are they going to be able to turn that into real ROI down the road? And how does that ROI translate into a much higher price for you guys today?
It's exciting stuff. I could tell just from your tone of voice and how you're explaining it that you yourself are extremely enthused about the opportunities ahead for the companies that you're advising. So really excited to see that. And I'll be excited to see some close announcements in the not too distant future with your name and True North's name attached. I wanted to segue into, something that we've been observing here at Finalis, which is the opportunities ahead for syndication on deals. There's a volume of deal opportunities that are hitting the market now. Some of it's connected with this great transfer of wealth that we're seeing in the small and medium-sized business realm. But clearly, there's a ton of opportunity for M&A as well as capital raising in the lower middle market. And one of the things that we've been tapping into at Finalis is the opportunity for there to be syndication on that deal flow among investment bankers and M&A advisors and business brokers. And so I'm just curious to hear your perspective on what you think generally of the potential of these types of marketplace ideas where, different folks that have different skill sets come to the table and create a syndicate around a specific opportunity to de-risk it and to ultimately get it closed. In some sense, I'm wondering if your joining True North is a reflection of that, of a desire to broaden out the bench or deepen the bench rather of skill sets around the table to maximize outcomes for business owners.
I think that there's a lot of potential to syndicate and to involve multiple actors within a single deal. And part of the reason for that, I think one of the things that, social media or the social media environments have really helped people understand and get comfortable with is, networking and even networking within a virtual environment or getting to know people through, electronic introductions, those types of things. Things that, long time ago or even, 20 years ago weren't really possible. You had to actually get there in person, those types of things. And I think that that has opened people's perceptions about what's possible. The other thing that I think has really kind of taken hold because of that is the whole notion of it takes a village. People are recognizing that, hey, you know what? I don't need to be limited by my own imposter syndrome because there's lots of people that I can work with who will fill in the blanks, who will, add their expertise, add their capabilities, add their investment funds, and basically bring together something that I wouldn't have been able to do by myself. But by having the tools available to help me find those additional pieces that I need in order to make a deal happen, that makes it so much more possible to make some of these things, not only to make them happen, but to accelerate them. You're not going to be looking around as much for the different pieces or for the perfect transaction. As opposed to looking for the perfect transaction with the perfect buyer, you might be able to find the pieces that you can come together and help that buyer basically figure out what it is that they need to do or what are their additional pieces that they need to add to the puzzle in order to come in and get that. Like I said, there's sometimes that I talk with businesses in an advisory role and, I say, well, listen, maybe one of the ways in which you need to grow is by thinking about some acquisitions, about doing some tuck-ins, about doing some, potentially doing a roll-up with some of your competitors. And they're like, well, but we don't really have, strong resources and stuff. And I'm like, the resources are out there. You simply need to have a strategy.
One of my biggest pet peeves is zero-sum thinking. Oh, if I do this, I can't do that, right? And I often talk to investment bankers and M&A advisors who tell me, oh, I have to turn down deals all the time. And that to me, and the most successful ones do. And that to me represents a missed opportunity. Why turn the deal down if you can serve it up in a network, a trusted community, and syndicate out that transaction to generate the best possible results for this person who came to you. At the end of the day, M&A advisory is very much a relationship business, as is legal services. And so the opportunity to deliver value to that relationship that has come to you seeking help is immeasurable. And even if it means, well, you're syndicating it out, so maybe you'll only get 20, 30, 40% of the opportunity as opposed to 100%, I always tell M&A advisors, 100% of nothing is nothing.
That's right.
I'll take 30% of something over 100% of nothing any day of the week.
Exactly. And so I think to me, what's so exciting about the opportunity to bring technology into professional services here is the opportunity to replace this zero-sum thinking with non-zero-sum thinking and actually grow the pie for everybody involved. And certainly, first and foremost, for the client that is entrusting the professional advisor with, in many cases, and I know this is definitely the case for True North, their single largest source of wealth that they've worked so hard to create over the course of their careers. And so that is an incredible, it's an incredible responsibility, but also an incredible opportunity to deliver that wealth back to the business owner. So really exciting. I know we're very excited to continue to build out those types of capabilities, but exciting to see you now in this new chapter working with True North on some of these transactions that you're advising.
Absolutely. And it, you know, from a legal standpoint, I know there was somebody that was asking me one day, because, you know, one of the other services that I've provided is just a general counsel service. And, you know, they're like, well, you know, why would I need a general counsel? I'm like, do you know how many different types of attorneys there are? Do you know how impossible it is to know about every aspect of law? And I'm like, you know, just putting together a deal, I need a tax guy. I need somebody who's going to be doing the financial stuff. So we're going to have to get an accountant. We need a person who's going to be, you know, doing the drafting. There's so many different specializations. You know, if it's a stock transaction, we're probably getting a securities attorney involved. And just that aspect by itself, just like you mentioned, it's very much a relationship game. If you don't have those resources, if you can't put your hands on those resources, it limits what you're about, what you're able to take on. And, you know, I think that, you know, tools like what you were talking about, you know, in terms of syndication, in terms of the Finalis marketplace that I think you had written to me about, that is the kind of thing that is going to give M&A professionals the ability to think outside the box, to go out and say, gosh, well, you know what? Right now, I'm limited in this way, but I don't have to be, because the tools are out there for me to find it.
Yeah, it's leverage at the end of the day.
Yep.
And I think in this new world where more and more people want to monetize their own brand equity, they want to build their own brands, build their own platforms, I think the opportunity to deliver that those types of network effects through the cloud is very much aligned with the direction that not just investment banking and M&A advisory, but professional services generally is heading. So with that, Ed, I just want to thank you so much for your time and for joining us here on the Pencils Down podcast. Very much looking forward to watching your and True North's successes in the days ahead, and look forward to continuing the conversation.
It was a great time. Thank you very much for inviting me on, and I look forward to hearing the playback as well. It's been great, and I'm looking forward to all the successes that we both have.
Thank you so much.
Finalis is a broker-dealer platform with everything that M&A advisors, investment bankers, and placement agents need to succeed. We deliver a broker-in-a-box regulatory affiliation solution, replete with tech-enabled compliance, research and analytics, deal lifecycle management tools, and a first-of-its-kind deal marketplace. Learn more at www.finalis.com. You've been listening to Pencils Down, a Finalis podcast. Keep connected with us by subscribing to the show on your favorite podcast player. If you like what you've heard, please rate the show. That helps us keep covering the latest in the private securities brokerage landscape. Thanks for listening. Until next time.